hate, no hype, no fear.
You're listening to Truth Frequency Radio.
We are TFR.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. Holy cow, there are a lot of you guys in the chat room already. People are already asking me questions. I have no idea what happened to those snow geese. I don't know. I will look into that. I agree. Probably chemtrails, poet. Lots of stuff going on in the chat room already. Appreciate you guys tuning in this morning. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. My name's JD. We are live right now on Truth Frequency Radio. And as such, you can hop into the chat room and join our many, many other listeners who are in there already this morning. Cannot thank you guys enough. Love the forum that Chris and Cherie have created here at Truth Frequency so we can all have this discussion going on in the morning. It's a good time to get your brain stretched out and start the day off right. So again, today is the 20th day of March. It is Friday. We have done it. The hostage crisis is almost over, ladies and gentlemen. For those of you guys out there in a cubicle right now, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. So anyway, hope you guys are gearing up for a decent weekend. I'm ready to get through this day, but it's going to be a fantastic show. I got to tell you right now, Andrew Gause is going to be joining us in the second hour of the broadcast today. One of my all-time favorite people, monetary historian and numismatist, probably nobody better in the world to tell us exactly what is going on in the economy today. There's a lot of transitional things happening behind the scenes right now, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. I'll try and touch on some of that when we get into the economic news here in the first hour. But I'll probably leave a little bit of that to open-ended questions for Andrew. So anyway, that's what's going on. I got to give you guys a heads up as well. Next week, wow, is going to be absolutely amazing. Just as a quick rundown, Daniel Estulin is going to be joining us on Monday. He, of course, is the author of The True Story of the Bilderberg Group. Definitely looking forward to talking to him. Sharon Wyeth is going to be joining us on Tuesday. She's written a book. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm telling you, you guys are going to love this. I'm really looking forward to Tuesday's chat here. She's written a book about the meaning of names and essentially that you can tell a lot about somebody by the name that they've been given. And this is, it's going to be a very, very interesting conversation for sure. Clint Richardson will be joining us again next week. We'll be talking more about the Corporation Nation. We had such a great response from his last show that we wanted to get him on again right away. There's a lot more questions that we've got for him. So we'll definitely be looking forward to that on Wednesday. Deborah Tavares on Thursday. You know, a lot of people think that what we do around here could be constituted as fear-mongering, things like that. But I don't think that's true. You know, I was listening to Popeye's show last night, and he made a pretty good point that nobody around here is really profiting from telling you guys what is actually going on. And, you know, Deborah Tavares is kind of – she's got some frightening information. I'm not going to lie. But, you know, the bottom line is that unless we can figure out who the enemies are in, you know, in real life, it reminds me of this video I saw once of a fighting match that took place in Thailand, and it was six Thai gentlemen who were all kickboxers, and they were all in a ring together blindfolded, and then the bell rang, and the only guy that was really taking it really bad was the referee, because everybody was just swinging wildly. And that's, I think, what everybody is out here doing right now. Everybody knows that there's a problem, but we're all kind of just swinging wildly, and it doesn't matter how martially arts trained you are. Unless you know who the adversaries are, you can't target those blows. And so, you know, that's why we bring Deborah Tavares on, because she will tell us, you know, point blank, who the agencies are that are trying to keep us from being able to be self-sustaining, and what's actually going on the legislative side. It's just important things to talk about. But she does also bring a lot of solutions to the table. You know, if it wasn't for her, we wouldn't know anything about the Delphi technique. You know, I certainly learned a lot from Deborah, so I'm definitely looking forward to her show on Thursday. It's always groundbreaking stuff, and it's always up to date, up to the minute, really. In terms of what's going on around us. And then Friday, going to be another fantastic show. I like these kind of esoteric style shows on Friday. But the one and only, L.A. Marzulli, will be joining us again on Friday. And I think we're going to try and get into a little bit more of a spiritual discussion, too, this weekend or next Friday. So, man, really looking forward to it. Can't tell you guys how much I appreciate the two gentlemen, the co-creators of Red Pill Reports, Robert and Fletch, behind the scenes getting these shows together for you guys. I know that you guys out there in the chat room appreciate it because you guys tell me every single day. Also, have you seen the website lately? Redpillreports.com? Man, starting to look, it just looks so good. Just love it to pieces. Also, as while we're on that subject really quick, just as a reminder, you can follow us on all of these social media networks. There's up at the top, there's a link to the Scene, our Scene page. There's YouTube, you can follow us there. Obviously, Facebook is still really popular. And you can follow us on Twitter as well. We do put tweets out every once in a while. So if you want to stay up to date that way with what is going on at the Red Pill Reports, that's a great way to do it. All of those links provided for your convenience right there at the top of the page. I still want to recommend people go and check out all of the mortgage crisis information. This story is still ongoing. You know, Greg is still working hard to bring his lawsuit to fruition. And, we're still putting in a request that you guys sign this mortgage crisis petition and start taking a leadership role out in your communities. So all of those links provided for you very easily right at the top of redpillreports.com. Appreciate you guys sharing the site with your friends and appreciate you guys all showing up on a Friday to hang out with me. It's going to be an awesome show, I got to tell you. But before we get to the awesomeness of the show, we got to get into the news. Obviously, what's the biggest global event that's taken place in the last 12 hours? Probably the big old freaking eclipse that just happened. And apparently, or not apparently, but unfortunately, us here in the United States, we did not get to see it. Now, if you're here in the States, I have it on pretty good authority that we're going to get a partial eclipse on the 4th of April. So at least we've got that to look forward to, but I was kind of hoping Kev would be in the chat room. Of course, I hope that he's out sleeping because I know that guy just never seems to sleep. What a great show he had last night too, ladies and gentlemen. If you missed it, go check out his archives, man. I'll tell you what, the Kev Baker show is the best show on Truth Frequency, hands down. I'll put that out there right now. Love it, love it, love it. Those guys talk about the most interesting things. And I was hoping he'd be in the chat room tonight because he's obviously in Glasgow and they, I think, got between 90 and 95%, you know, total darkness as a result of this eclipse this morning and whether or not he'd drug himself out of bed to see it. Lex says he saw it. Are you in the UK, Lex? See, this is why I like the chat room, because we get to talk about all this stuff. I didn't get to see it. I didn't feel it, you know. I don't know. I slept right through it. Is it weird that it was so close to the CERN facilities? Crazy stuff, man. I don't know. But anyway, the eclipse did happen. There are some fantastic videos, on YouTube of it. Really, really cool stuff. And again, that's an event that is not going to happen in conjunction with the spring equinox today. Just as a side note, I think half of the country of the United States is under some kind of winter weather warning today. But anyway, first day of spring, yay. Also, so again, that conjunction with the supermoon eclipse, first day of spring, that won't happen again, I think, for like another 500,000 years. And who knows who'll be around then to see it. We'll probably all be living on Mars or someplace else. Anyway, so if you guys got to see it, very cool. I'm very jealous that you guys got to see that. That's a pretty unique event, and you kind of wonder what was going on behind the scenes while all that stuff was happening. Anyway, let's move on to the international news right now. Usually, for new listeners out there, this is what we do the first hour. We kind of just go over everything that's going on around the world. Obviously, the eclipse was a big deal. And let's move over into the EU right now. There was a proposal last night coming out of the EU. They're getting ready to launch their first operation in a new propaganda war against Russia within days, apparently. So the EU leaders, akin, are looking to give formal approval to this campaign at a summit that happened yesterday, or maybe will happen next Thursday. I'm not really sure. It's not really clear in this article. But anyway, officials told Reuters that a dozen public relations and communication experts will start next week will start by the end of March in Brussels with a brief to counter what the EU says is deliberate misinformation coordinated by the Kremlin over Moscow's rule and aims in the Ukraine and elsewhere in Europe. So this is the first stage of a plan that leaders want the EU foreign policy chief Federica Mogherini to finalize by June, which may include efforts to produce and share Russian language broadcast programming, notably for ethnic Russians and in the ex-Soviet states. These communities currently tune in heavily to Russian state broadcasters, which have a bigger production budget than local stations for their entertainment output as well as news. The EU leaders, most especially in the Baltic states, have been alarmed at how Moscow has used its media to gain support for its views and policies. So we can't obviously allow that. So now the EU leaders were due to discuss the renewing economic sanctions and other measures to deter Russia from backing Ukrainian rebels, as well as responses to other perceived threats from an increasingly assertive Moscow at dinner last night. Okay. So again, the draft statement seen by Reuters stresses now a need to challenge Russia's ongoing disinformation campaigns. The Brussels unit's immediate task is the correction and fact-checking of misinformation and to develop an EU narrative. There's the key words there. To develop an EU narrative through key messages, articles, op-eds, fact sheets, infographics, including material in the Russian language. So there you go. Again, you can see, you have to read a little bit to get into the real meat of it, but and to develop an EU narrative. So they're essentially trying to counter what they anticipate to be the misinformation coming out of Russia right now. Is it misinformation? Obviously, who knows? Of course, both these people are, going to tell two sides. Every story has two sides, essentially, is what's going on right now. And we probably won't ever get to the bottom of it. But I just found it interesting that the EU would putting out in public the fact that we're starting a new propaganda arm of the military there. Good times. And also new sanctions issued by Moscow yesterday include about 200 people known for their anti-Russian positions and actions, such as the U.S. Deputy National Security Advisor Carolyn Atkinson and firebrand Arizona Senator John McCain. So again, Moscow firing back with some sanctions of their own, about 200 people. This report about the new list of foreigners subject to entry bans and asset freezes in Russia was published yesterday in the Thursday issue of the popular daily Izvestia, which is a newspaper referred to an undisclosed source in the presidential administration, and the foreign ministry refused to comment on this information. So again, an unknown source, but apparently Russia starting to put some sanctions against us again. It's just going to become more and more escalating. You know, this is how it's going to go for a while. Also, this is a report from Russia Today, so you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt here. But apparently a poll has come out in the western side of Ukraine right now, and Poroshenko is not doing too well. He has, of course, only been in office for like 7 or 8 months at this point. But now more than half of the country there saying that they are unhappy with his politics and the direction the country is going. Only 8% actually say that the country is going in the right direction. And again, 2/3 assert that they do not approve of the president's actions. So tough times ahead for Mr. Poroshenko. It'd probably be easier just to be a billionaire candy supervisor or whatever it was that he did before this. Okay. Let's get into this Israel-Palestine situation, because obviously there was – I mean, this situation is just going back and forth and continuing to escalate. But so obviously Benjamin Netanyahu won the election the other day, and he won that election. You know, it kind of came down to the wire. And so the day before the election, he was on his television programs there essentially outlining his new stance that there would not be a two-state solution. If he was elected, he basically said that he saw no way that there would be a peaceful two-state solution, or that he would give, you know, statehood to Palestine. So in response to that, of course, we had the story yesterday. The United States said, okay, we were kind of waiting to see what the election results were going to be. And then once we figured out that Netanyahu was going to win, maybe now we're going to go ahead and readdress this idea of going along with the UN resolution to allow statehood for Palestine. So, okay, that happened yesterday, and then in the evening yesterday, more news broke. So now Benjamin Netanyahu, in his first American television interview, again, since winning his re-election on Tuesday, came out again on TV and said that he wouldn't – this was Thursday. He backed away from – I'm sorry. My brain's not working this morning. It's Friday, guys. Okay. So, again, before the election, he said that he would not allow the establishment of a Palestinian state. He said he did not want a one-state solution. Now what he is saying is that he wants a sustainable two-state solution. So did he essentially go on TV and get a bunch of rabble-rousing going up inside of Israel? He was tweeting that he might not win the election during the election because there were, quote-unquote, Arabs being bussed in. That's a direct quote from Netanyahu. And so he really, I think, you know, drove the fear – the fear quotient up pretty high there in Israel, and then pretty much snowballed the people who voted for him by saying that he wasn't going to ever allow for the establishment of a Palestinian state. And now he's come out and said, well, that's not really what I meant. You know, he says, I mean, circumstances there have to change, but he does want now a sustainable two-state solution. I don't believe that because just since his reelection, there have been more bulldozing. There's been more things going on in the occupied region. There's several stories that have come out. You know, Israel's march through the occupied Palestine area is ongoing and hasn't stopped at all. So to me, this is Benjamin Netanyahu coming out and trying to kind of quell the uprising that's happening in the United States right now, because if you know, the United States is we really are going to allow Iran to develop energy. We are going to drop these sanctions. It's going to happen. And part of the process of all of that too is pulling some wind out of Israel's sails. And I wonder if this is Netanyahu responding to the fact that the United States says that they would be interested in listening more carefully to the UN resolution, you know, adopting statehood for Palestine. I just feel like this is probably, you know, this is just his response to the fact that he can see the writing is kind of on the wall in terms of the United States and the relationship between us and them. So anyway, he's come out now and he says now, and in fact, he does not want a single state solution. He would rather see a peaceful two-party solution. But again, actions do speak louder than words, and you kind of have to wonder if he's going to be sincere in that. Yep. Okay. I agree. Wood's telling me I need to stop what I'm doing. I'm having a drink of coffee here. Okay. Wetting my whistle. Bear with me here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. We like coffee. Coffee is good stuff. Okay. This story broke on Raw Story yesterday, too, and it is basically a response from the Palestinian, the leader there, Mohamed Abbas. He essentially said right after the election, I probably should have covered this story before I covered Netanyahu's counter, but immediately after the election, Abbas came out and said, well, here, you know, we're screwed now. There's essentially Netanyahu just won, and he's saying that there's not going to be a two-party solution here, so what are we supposed to do at this point? And I totally do agree with that. I would have been very concerned. I still am very concerned for the Palestinian people, especially given some of the other reports that are coming out right now. Well, I'm not going to go through all of them right now because we will be running out of time. So we're going to move on to Saudi Arabia here real quick. Obviously, Saudi Arabia and Swedish, relations down the tubes here at this point, but it kind of reached a new level yesterday. Saudi Arabia said yesterday it will not be issuing any new visas for Swedish business people in retaliation for the comments made by the Swedish foreign minister, Margot Wallström. So of course, you know, diplomatic ties between the two countries have been severed since Sweden accused Saudi Arabia of blocking Wallström from speaking at an Arab League meeting earlier this month. However, her canceled remarks were published by the Swedish foreign ministry. And while they did not mention Saudi Arabia, Wallström's statement stressed women and human rights. So in retaliation, the Scandinavian country then said it would not renew a lucrative defense cooperation deal with the oil-rich Middle Eastern kingdom because of its poor record for democracy and civil liberties. And now the diplomatic row between Sweden and Saudi Arabia over these military ties and human rights has escalated even further. So again, now no visas at all. If you're a Swedish business person, you're not going to Saudi Arabia at all. What is this going to do? There are quite a few major businesses inside of Sweden that do operate with Saudi Arabia, again, with weapons manufacturing and energies, things like that, probably to the tune of about $500 million. So this is actually a pretty big deal in terms of the Swiss economy. But what's going to happen? Who knows? Who knows? What's going on? What am I not giving love today, Wood? I'm sorry, man. I'm trying to read and drink coffee, and it's, you know, there's all kinds of crazy stuff happening right now. Big old, let's see. We were listening yesterday. I think if you guys heard Kev's show, he was talking about some changes that are taking place in France. I mentioned some of them yesterday, the banking changes that were taking place. But France, I'm telling you, every single day seems to be up in the ante here. And now, in an effort to boost its intelligence gathering, France is pushing for a law to allow authorities to spy on the digital and mobile communications of anyone linked to a quote-unquote terrorist inquiry. Now, I don't know what a terrorist inquiry is, but apparently it does not actually require any judicial authorization. So the government presented a draft law to Parliament just yesterday. They said, this is a quote from the Prime Minister there, he's saying, facing an increasing jihadist threat, we have to further enhance the effectiveness of the surveillance against terrorists. That's not a very good French accent, but anyway, Valls said that the, Valls is his name, he said, the text of the draft provided the intelligence services the means enough to fight terrorism, yet respecting individual freedoms, a view not supported by many human rights organizers and lawyers. The draft law would give the intelligence services the right to perform, quote-unquote, security interceptions of emails and phone conversations, also to install radio beacons in suspects' cars, as well as microphones and cameras in their homes. Welcome to the Patriot Act, ladies and gentlemen, if you're in France right now, by the way. It could also be used to track what a suspect types on a computer keyboard with the use of special software, and also force internet service providers to hand over data to security services. However, the Prime Minister underlined that the draft, quote-unquote, this is actually a, this is what the Prime Minister said, quote-unquote, it's not a French-style Patriot Act. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. He says the future law only legitimizes the actions already common amongst intelligence services. So again, all this stuff is already going on. So essentially all this law is going to do is codify the already current activities of the intelligence agencies there in France. I got to tell you, I was thinking about getting a little place in the south of France. I'm not thinking about that anymore. Not anymore. But anyway, more draconian law is coming down across France right now. Just absolutely crazy. And also, some news coming out of the UK in the Thames Valley there. Police have staged a mass operation involving 150 officers to clamp down on human trafficking across the UK. It resulted in 10 arrests this week. The force carried out raids at 17 premises in Berkshire, Yorkshire, and London at about 10 a.m. on Tuesday morning, which freed six victims of human trafficking. And the addresses included three nail salons and three properties in Reading, two nail salons and two properties in Workingham, and one property in the West Berkshire, five in London, and one nail salon in York. The raids took place after an 18-month investigation into trafficking called Operation Rehobaum, which was coordinated by the National Crime Agency and the Metropolitan Police and the North Yorkshire Police. All the victims were sent to refuge centers set up by the Red Cross and the Salvation Army, and police arrested 10 individuals ranging in age from 19 to 40, and all except one have been released on bail until June. The Times apparently revealed back in 2013 that nail salons, I did not know this, were a hotbed of trafficked labor. The paper claimed that many were staffed by victims from Vietnam. Again, stuff I had no idea. While only 29,000 Vietnamese immigrants are registered in the country, the Times estimates over 100,000 Vietnamese manicurists work in the UK. I did not know any of that, and good thing. At least they're trying to crack down on some of that stuff, because I'll tell you what, the human trafficking thing is a huge, huge deal, and it's disgusting, and really just the tip of the iceberg for the old disgusting things that are going on out there right now. Let me think. What is that? Not important. Okay, news out of Iraq. And I find this to be interesting that, well, it's not really news out of Iraq. It's news out of Ukraine coming via Iraq. And I find it really interesting that we've got to go so far out of bounds to find any kind of information about what's actually going on in the world. And I didn't even see this story in Russia today, and you would have thought this would have been one that they would have covered. But a Russian humanitarian aid convoy with more than 170 trucks carrying 1,900 tons of food, medicine, and construction materials has now crossed the border into eastern Ukraine. A representative for the Russian Emergencies Ministry National Center for Crises Situations. Wow, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that was going to be his whole title. A representative for the Russian Emergencies Ministry's National Center for Crisis Situations. He said that on Thursday. Again, the Emergencies Ministry's vehicles with humanitarian aid for Donbass have completed customs at the two border control points of Donetsk, and all other vehicles have gone through all of the formalities of customs and border control have now crossed the border into Ukraine. Sorry, these the articles sometimes are tough because they're translated from Arabic, so you guys have to bear with me here. But again, massive humanitarian convoy going into the eastern Ukraine from Russia into the Donbass region. Not surprising that we're not hearing about this in the mainstream news. Now, is this what you call support of the Russian rebels, giving them medicine and food and construction materials and trying to make sure that they stay alive, given the fact that all their power has been turned off and a million people have been displaced? I mean, what is Russia supposed to stand by and do, especially if you understand the fact that the border is porous and the fact that a lot of the people who live in the Ukraine were once Russian, and they all have family over there, and a lot of them served in the military. And again, if you're on the Russian side and you're serving in the military, and you see your cousins six blocks away on the other side without power and food and medicine, are you going to wait for orders from Moscow to start gathering stuff and taking it over there? No, you're going to take care of your family, because that's what people do. And I think that's what we're seeing here. But in a big, huge way, again, more humanitarian convoy from Russia. Okay, my cat's going crazy. I don't know what's going on. I gave him some catnip about a half an hour ago, and apparently it's gone to his head, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, let's do this quick follow-up story. We haven't heard about this in a while either, but this did just break yesterday from the International Business Times. Apparently, the people who have been searching for the Malaysia airline flight MH370 still, at this point, as of yesterday, have found nothing. They have found nothing in the Indian Ocean. A lot of people are wondering now, again, like myself, if the Indian Ocean is even the right place for these trash collectors to be searching in. But anyway, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation reported that 27 people scoured a 60-mile stretch of ocean on fishing boats from the rocky low point of New Zealand to the mouth of Port Davey off the coast of Tasmania over 8 days as part of their annual cleanup. And their efforts are significant because they picked up 80,000 pieces of debris that had drifted 6,000 miles across the ocean, with objects like ropes and floats coming from as far away as Madagascar and South Africa. They found a roll of tape from Madagascar that's from a vanilla bean manufacturer. That's pretty interesting. But again, no debris emerged from the missing plane. The official search area for the missing Boeing 777, which mysteriously disappeared from radar on the 8th of March 2014 with 239 passengers on board, had been identified in the southern Indian Ocean according to satellite data analysis. That is horse hockey. That thing is at Diego Garcia. I'd put my bottom dollar on it, ladies and gentlemen. But anyway, no trash, just saying. Still an ongoing mystery. Where did that plane go? How could it possibly have disappeared? Electronic hijacking is my answer for that, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, we got to go to a three-minute break. When we come back, we have lots more news to cover. Some national stuff. Got a couple of funny stories, too. And Andrew Goss will be joining us in about half an hour. Keep it right here, guys. Thanks for being in the chat room. We'll see you guys in just a second.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Hangar 18, your TFR Roundtable. Saturdays, Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. Let's get into some national news now here in the States. Just as a little reminder, we talked a little bit about this yesterday, about the White House office that is in charge of cataloging and archiving government emails. Now they're no longer subject to the Freedom of Information Act. Just wanted to put that into the picture of the Hillary email situation, because obviously Hillary's office is underneath the office that is no longer subject to Freedom of Information Act requests. So again, this move also ironically came on the National Freedom of Information Day, which was March 15th, which just shows kind of another facet of how highly corrupt the U.S. government is. It also seems to be coming to the picture here that that it was known that Clinton's emails were private all along, and it was potential also that she was actually instructed to use the private accounts to avoid exposure of details regarding this whole Benghazi incident and more. So again, Hillary Clinton not out of the woods just yet, but just wanted to remind everybody, the most transparent administration ever now, less and less transparent as the days go on, and because of that, probably going to even be more difficult to get a handle on exactly what Hillary's involvement with Benghazi was, although I think we all pretty have a pretty good idea what that involvement was at this point. Also, President Obama, obviously his party was trounced in last year's midterm election due in part to poor turnout among Democrats, but he had a very intriguing idea the other day. He is actually kind of floating the idea of mandatory voting in the United States. What do you guys think about mandatory voting? I don't understand, if they've got the die bowls all hooked up, why wouldn't they just pretend that everybody voted anyway and we could all just stay home and they could just go ahead and pick who they wanted? You know, what's the point of mandatory voting? But he's actually pretty serious about this. He says, I think it would be transformative if everybody voted. This was in a town hall event in Cleveland. He said that would counteract the campaign money more than anything. If everybody voted, then it would completely change the political map in this country. So again, he raised the subject during a discussion of curbing the influence of campaign donations in the United States elections. And the president said he had never discussed the idea publicly before, but said Australia and some other countries do have compulsory voting. And the president didn't commit to pushing mandatory voting initiatives at the federal level, but he said that may end up being a better strategy in the short term than finding a solution to curbing campaign donations. I did not know, but Australia is one of 11 nations worldwide with mandatory voting, and Australians who fail to vote can be fined or even jailed for repeatedly not casting a ballot. I did not know that. I'm of the opinion still, I know you guys know this about me, but I'm not much of a voter. I'm kind of the opinion that I can self-govern, and I think when you ask for a lawyer in a trial, you're essentially giving up your responsibility. You're basically saying, I don't understand enough about the world to handle myself in a courtroom. And I think that's the same thing we're doing when we're giving our power over to a for-profit corporation. And that's the other side. A, you've got the Diebold situation that controls where all the votes go anyway. So I don't imagine that, you know, any type of, we're not going to backtrack away from that. And then at the same time, you know, understanding that we have a corporate nation. We have a corporation masquerading as a government. When was the last time a for-profit corporation voted for a president? That's not how for-profit corporations work. And it's, if you understand the corporate nature of the government, then all of the president's speeches make a lot more sense, just generally speaking, if you understand that he's speaking to his shareholders and not necessarily to us. But again, that's what I think is going on. Oh man, we had that little story about Mr. Tom Cotton the other day, talking about Iran and the grave threat that they pose to Tehran. Unbelievably funny. But again, I gotta keep drawing attention back to some of these people that we seem to vote for and put in office, which again gets us back onto the point of whether or not we need to be asking other people to manage these things for us. But the GOP Representative Louis Gohmert had some pretty startling statements yesterday. Again, he is a Republican from Texas, pushing some pretty wild conspiracy theories Wednesday to argue now that the U.S. must attack Iran to destroy its nuclear program. He says, this is a direct quote, "We need to make it clear to Iran, you can play these silly games with our president that buys into them and our Secretary of State, but the American people aren't buying it, and you're going to pay the price." That's what Gohmert said. He claims, he made these claims on Washington Watch, which is a radio program hosted by Tony Perkins, the president of the Family Research Council, according to Right Wing Watch. Anyway, he goes on to say, "I'm hoping and praying that the president will realize, despite the agenda he has that has put Christians in jeopardy all around the world, that he will not want to leave the Democratic Party so devastated that they won't recover for decades. Maybe once he starts doing that, he'll realize that we need to bomb Iran's nuclear facilities, and that all the ones that we know of and anything that they move to fix, we should bomb that as well." That's what Gohmert says. So anyway, the Republican lawmaker said it was too late to negotiate with Iran on its nuclear program. He says we need to encourage this administration to go take out Iran's nuclear capability. "I think it's time to bomb Iran, anything that resembles a nuclear facility with centrifuges." And he again added at the end, "It's time to bomb." So there you go. More warmongering against Iran, which still, you know, given our study of history here on the program, makes less and less sense as more evidence is coming out that Iran probably not necessarily as bad. But, I mean, these are the people that we've got in office in Washington right now. That's their solution. Anything that looks like a centrifuge, we should bomb it. That's the solution. Unbelievable that these are the people that we choose to represent us. Also, a story coming out of Washington, D.C. Officials in Washington, D.C. right now are reviewing thousands of criminal cases after learning that a quote-unquote computer glitch may have prevented defense attorneys from receiving evidence during the last 2.5 years. An apparent problem with the database software used to log law enforcement records in the nation's capital was brought to the attention of authorities last week. The federal attorney overseeing D.C. said Monday, prompting an emergency probe to be launched over the weekend of records maintained by the city's Metropolitan Police Department. According to the Washington City paper, who broke the story on Tuesday, police could enter information into the system only to have it never appear in reports. Officials are not sure how many cases have been affected, but the Metropolitan Police Department began using the database, iLeads is what it's called, back in September of 2012, according to the Washington Post. So it was possible that in pending and past cases, the Metropolitan Police Department was in possession of information that should have been disclosed to the defense and had unwittingly failed to provide that information. This is according to the outgoing United States Attorney Ronald Mackin. He said this in a letter to lawyers earlier this week. Again, the missing details that have so far been uncovered have proved to be quote-unquote minimal in quantity, Mackin said, and had in many instances already been disclosed to the defense through other means. So again, here's what he's actually saying. The details of this have been minimal in quantity, so there is a quantity, albeit small, of information that should have gotten into defense attorneys' hands so that they could properly defend people in the court systems there, right? Minimal in quantity. We're admitting first off that there's a quantity, right? And also, in many of the instances, so not all of the instances, already have been disclosed to the defense, right, through other means. So not only is there a minimal quantity, there is a quantity, but then in several, I would say, at least a few or several of the instances, the information that the defense would have needed to properly defend their clients was not provided to them. And that's been going on for 2.5 years. So, lots of good stuff going on there in Washington, D.C. right now. I'm sure a lot of defense attorneys are a little bit upset right now because it'd be difficult to do your job if key information about your clients was being withheld from you. And, of course, they're going to call it a computer glitch. But 2.5 years, that seems like a long time for a computer glitch to be going on. Just saying. Okay, what else is going on here? I'm not going to cover that because that's awful, and we're just going to move on. Let's talk a little bit about the economy here right now because there are some things going on. Obviously, the new gold fix started this morning. We'll see if there's been any results in that. Does look like gold right now is up about $12, so we're at $11.80 for an ounce of gold. $16.71 will get you an ounce of silver. The euro has actually come up about 1% today, so we're at 107 on the euro. Following suit with that, the U.S. dollar index has dropped about 1%, so we're at 98.55. The Dow is up currently 187 points, about 1%. S&P also up about 1%, 2101. So what in the world is going on? I have absolutely no idea. We're going to get to that gold fix here in just a second there, brother, but I got to tell you, I don't know as much about it as I'm sure Andrew Gause is. So we'll touch on it for a second, but I'm going to really want to let Andrew kind of go into that here in about 20 minutes. So you'll just have to bear with us here for a second there, Wolf. And is Truth in the crowd today? Not seeing him. So I'll see if I can get you guys a BDI that's updated. Again, I don't know why investing.com doesn't seem to have the BDI updated every day. But I would imagine it's probably a little bit on the rise. But other than that, I don't know what's going on. Gold just popped again. We're at 180 right now across the board there. Crude oil up about 3% today, 47.03. So $47.03 for a barrel of crude. And that's what's going on across the markets right now. Fairly calm across the board. Switzerland. We've talked about this Chinese investment infrastructure bank, the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank that everybody seems to be jumping ship towards right now. Well, following suit with that, Switzerland did announce yesterday they will also be participating in the establishment of the new International Development Bank backed by China, along with several other Western countries. We had the UK was the first one to jump ship. I believe France and Italy were yesterday. We waved goodbye to them, and now Switzerland moving on towards that direction. So there you go, another country jumping on board with the AIIB. We talked a little also about the other surprise move that Switzerland had had pulled yesterday, going more negativer on their interest rates and some of their key short-term accounts over there. So, more surprise news going on in the economy. Usually I don't try and cover big, long articles that have a lot of charts in them, but this one, I think we can all kind of imagine our way through it. I wanted to talk about these 10 charts that are basically showing that we are way, way, way more off than just before the last economic crisis, right? First one, just imagine in your mind a rectangular chart, right? And across the bottom, put the years from 1970 to 2015. And then on the left-hand side going up, just go from zero to 20 million. And then just, while you're looking at that rectangle, put a line from the zero down in the bottom left corner all the way up to the top right corner, the kind of the near, 19 trillion where we are right now. Some people might call that a parabolic curve of the national debt. I don't know if it's necessarily, I think you'd have to see a bigger chart, but it goes from the bottom left all way up to the top right. And it's just saying since 1970, the national debt has absolutely exploded. Total debt. You could pretty much imagine the same chart. Also, starting in 1950 going up through 2015, pretty much draw that same line. You got the velocity of money chart, which is pretty interesting. Velocity of money is just how quickly money is moving around. It's a very good economic indicator when there's a lot of money moving, changing hands, circulating through the system really rapidly. That's when the economy is very healthy. So if you would imagine, just put in your mind that chart that we just had where the line went from the bottom left up to the top right, just reverse that, top left to bottom right. Velocity of money crashing into the floor. So again, the velocity of money slowing significantly, especially during the last 5 years. That's a major, major, major one. If you have in mind that same chart with the line that goes from the top left to the bottom right, you can apply that to the home ownership rate as well. There's another one there. Unemployment rate. You could also apply that same Same line going down. Another line going down, labor force participation rate. That's a pretty staunch line going in down. You could also reverse that and go back to the first chart we talked about with the line going all the way up in a parabolic curve, talking about the inactivity rate for men in their prime. That inactivity rate, especially since 2010. These are the formative years. These are the years when people are supposed to be out there starting careers. And a lot of those now are, minimum wage jobs or, living at home with our parents because there's just nothing else out there. But again, that's another chart. Very easy to imagine here. And that's pretty much it. We'll go, what's another one? Government dependence, same thing. Shooting to the moon since about 2010. So I don't know. Just looking at all these charts right now, things are not looking super fantastic in terms of the United States. I want to talk about the gold fix. I did mention that we were going to be talking about that. So here's my problem with this new gold fix. First of all, I'm not really sure I understand what the old gold fix was actually doing. So I want to ask Andrew to really try and clarify some of that for us. But here's what I'm learning about the gold fix right now is that six banks right now, as of this morning, we're set to join London's new electronic gold fix, administrating from the ICE benchmark. Okay. The four existing banks that run the old, almost 100-year-old gold fix process will stay on for the transition. There's my first red flag. Those banks, which were part of the initial 100-year-old gold fix process, include HSBC, Barclays, Scotiabank, and Societe Generale. The other two banks are likely to be the United States. And they also said that no Chinese banks will be taking part initially. So that kind of threw me for a loop a little bit as well. So they were very tight-lipped about who was actually going to be involved with this new benchmark today. So again, a handful of banks start setting the gold prices electronically as of this morning. Sources with direct knowledge about the matter said yesterday. So the Intercontinental Exchange completes the sweeping change to London's bullion benchmarks and dispenses with the century-old gold fix. But since I'm going to skip all that, since 1919, reforming triggered, regulatory push for more transparency after the LIBOR interest rate rigging scandal broke in 2012 saw banks stop acting as both data providers and market makers. So the ICE benchmark, IBA administration, is a subsidiary of the ICE organization. It was chosen to provide a physically settled electronic and tradable auction, which will become the LBMA gold price for the London Bullion Market Association. Now, Friday's move to the electronic auction record keeping should repair outside perceptions of London's role in the market. And I think that's the most important sentence in this entire deal here. I think, going back to the other article that we were just reading, again, which are the banks that are going to be handling this whole transitional phase? HSBC, Barclays, Scotiabank, Societe Generale. These are all banks that were on the hook for major LIBOR and libel and FX manipulation already. So is this a situation where something changed, or is this a situation where the new boss looks a whole lot like the old boss? That's kind of what I'm wondering right now. I'm sure Andrew will have a better explanation of what's going on. But the LBMA, which and you know, there's the other thing too, is because remember the sentence we just said here. So the goal here was to repair the perceptions of London's role in the market. But the London ICE administration, the benchmark administration, is still responsible for the market. LBMA is going to retain the intellectual property of the new benchmark, and it says that 11 entities total intend to participate in the new mechanisms from the start. Now, this particular article does say So the Industrial and Commercial Bank of China, the Bank of China International, and China Construction Bank, which are ordinary members of the LBMA, were unlikely to be in the list of new participants at this stage. So again, the major mega China banks that we thought were going to be a part of this whole new process don't even appear to be on the membership, in the membership here at this point. So I don't know. I don't know. So that's where we're going to stop with that one right now, because again, right now, four ex-bankers have been appointed to the chairs, and they're going to rotate in their daily duty during the initial 6 months. So for the initial 6 months, I don't know what we're going to see. I don't know if anything's going to change. Gold, popped up a little bit today. Was it like $11 up? I don't know. This is just mind-boggling, and I think at the end of the day, we're looking at another shell game here. I really, really do. I think the new bosses look a whole lot like the old bosses, and perhaps all they're doing is kind of just changing the drapes so that they can appear as if they're a little bit more on the up and up right now. I don't know. According to a Bloomberg report that came out yesterday, the U.S. Justice Department now is seeking roughly $1 billion from each of the major global banks under investigation for the settling of foreign currency manipulation probes. So the banks now involved, again, same old parties here, Barclays, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan, the Royal Bank of Scotland, and UBS and RBS. And the settlement talks took a very serious turn in the last couple weeks, and they will likely lead to resolution of the FX market rigging allegations brought by the U.S. Though $1 billion is the starting point, the actual settlement amount is expected to vary as these banks push hard to lower the penalties. Further, the U.S. prosecutors are insisting that Barclays, J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, and Royal Bank of Scotland to plead guilty of charges. So again, we're not going to let these guys essentially bargain their way out of this. They're going to actually have to plead guilty, which is kind of a big deal. And it's notable also that UBS has been granted immunity from the suit for antitrust violations, as the company was the very first to notify the U.S. authorities about the probable manipulations. So taking into account the looming settlement, the banks have increased their legal reserves in the last quarter to offset any financial implication once the talks are finalized. Barclays took out over $1 billion in reserves for FX settlements in the fourth quarter. Royal Bank of Scotland also did about the same, $1.2 billion for legal issues. Again, J.P. Morgan following suit. So all of these banks over the last quarter have essentially put a whole bunch of money aside to get ready for the settlement. Somebody in the chat room asked me yesterday where the money from the settlement goes. Who actually gets this money? And I got to be honest, I have no idea. So we're going to ask Andrew about that too. I would hasten to bet it's not any of us that are listening to the program right now. I don't think we'll see any of that. And also in a follow-up story, yeah, I love you guys in the chat room. You guys make me laugh. investigations into the currency and interest rate manipulation cases could now hit new depths as the U.S. Justice Department is expected to revisit settlements and to revert them if banks are found to have breached practices since the initial settlements were put forward. So again, this new news adds to the existing concerns that the firms in question face, as previous settlements now are coming under more question. According to the report, authorities are now assessing as to whether or not the banks were involved in currency rate manipulation even after settling with regulators for their involvement in the LIBOR issues. So again, all of these same banks right now that have already settled for the LIBOR manipulation, the Justice Department is essentially going to give them their checks back and say that, hey, you guys have still been doing this, and the whole point of us suing the heck out of you guys was to get you to stop doing this, and since you haven't, we're going to give you back these settlements, and we're going to sue the ever-living heck out of you guys again. So I'm hoping that that's the case, but it does look like this investigation into the FX stuff is getting more and more serious as time goes on, and that's good. I mean, this needs to break. We need to start arresting these bankers. We need to find out every single piece of collusion that's gone on and flush this whole system down the toilet, because, I'm over it. I don't know about you guys out there, but I'm freaking over it. Also, Caterpillar, just as an indicator of things going on, because we've talked a lot about the shale industry and the mining industries, Caterpillar's February sales down another 11%. Very, very bad news for Caterpillar right now. It's, one of the largest makers of construction and mining equipment on the planet. So sales down another 11%. So more signs of things to come. Let's go ahead and move away from the economy, because obviously Andrew will be joining us in just a few minutes and we'll have lots to talk about with him. Amazon in the news and the science and tech stuff here today. Amazon did receive yesterday the Federal Aviation Administration's experimental airworthiness certificate, which means essentially Amazon Logistics Incorporated can now fly their unmanned aircraft and try and figure out if they're going to be able to use this in, this much conjectured delivery system or delivery program that Amazon would like to come out with. But the FAA typically issues experimental certificates to manufacturers and technology developers to operate a UAS that does not have to have a certain type of certificate or one that does not have a certain type of certificate already available. So anyway, under provisions of this certificate, all flight operations must be conducted at 400 feet or below during daylight hours in visual meteorological conditions. The UAS must always remain within visual line of sight of the pilot and observer, and the pilot actually flying the aircraft must have at least a private pilot's certificate and current medical certification. So I can't really see, just given those constraints, how far Amazon is going to be able to push this technology in terms of, you know, autonomous drone delivery systems, because that whole caveat of having to stay in line of sight with an operator kind of makes that stupid. If there's going to be an operator traveling around, you know, in a car watching their drone, it would be just as easy to, you know, hire an Uber driver and have them deliver stuff. It'd probably be way more cost effective and they probably lose less product. But anyway, that's what's going on. Amazon is moving forward. They're going to start providing the FAA with monthly data, and the company must report the number of flights conducted, the pilot duty time per flight, unusual hardware or software malfunctions, any deviations from air traffic controllers' instructions, and any unintended loss of communication links. And the FAA includes these reporting requirements in all UAS experimental airworthiness certificates. So very interesting stuff going on with Amazon there. Also want to mention, I know you guys know how much I love Tesla and how much I want one of these cars, but I want one even more now. The Tesla S obviously is probably one of the coolest cars that's ever really come out. I'm pretty sure that someday I will own one. But again, Elon Musk just never seems to stop raising the bar on how cool his things are. He's got a new edition of the Model S. It is the P85D, okay? The P in 85D stands for performance, and the D stands for dual, because it has dual 85 kilowatt batteries. It achieves all-wheel drive traction and performance, and it has an insane mode. So it actually has a button on the dash that you can transfer it from sport mode to insane mode, which gives you a top speed of 155 miles an hour and a 0 to 60 speed in 3.2 seconds. Here's where I really think it's interesting, because obviously what we're talking about with when we're talking about electronic vehicles is torque. You know, electronic vehicles have instant access to crazy amounts of torque, and Elon Musk is pretty tight-lipped about what he believes the actual torque development in this particular vehicle is. But Drag Times actually took one of these Model S, the P85Ds, put it into insane mode and put it on a dynamometer. 865 foot-pounds of torque at the wheels. That is absolutely incredible. There's really, I don't know. I know there's a lot of Mopar guys out there, but woo, buddy, 864 foot-pounds of torque in a sedan that looks the way a Tesla S does. I'm telling you, I'm sold. I want one. Anyway, that's what's going on in your tech news. There's a lot more stuff. You can go to redpillreports.com, check out the show section. You'll be able to find everything you want to know about Andrew Gause and also see all of the extra news that we aggregated from around the world. There are some health news, some science news. I just never seem to get to all of it because I like to ramble a little bit. But anyway, we're going to go to this quick 3-minute break. When we come back, Andrew Gause will be joining us, and we will try and figure out just what in the hell is going on in the economy, geopolitics. We'll have a little fun too, because it is Friday. Thank you guys for being here. We'll be right back, guys.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
You must unite what has been set asunder.
We are TFR, Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys very much for sticking with us on that 3-minute break. We really appreciate you guys hanging out in the chat room. Everybody has always got so many great questions and comments going on. And right now, if you guys have questions or comments for our guest today, that'll be a fantastic place for you guys to put them. I will steward them across. Very, very excited. Obviously, it's Friday. Everybody's excited for a Friday show. But we're bringing, again, one of my very favorite guests in the world back to the program today. Andrew Gause is going to be joining us. You can find his website at usgoldcoins.com. I highly recommend checking that out. You can also follow the links from Red Pill Reports to Andrew's website to find out more information about him and about purchasing some gold right now. Gold, obviously, in the limelight today. We're going to be talking quite a bit about that, I'm sure. For those of you guys who don't know Andrew, he's been on the program a few times. He's absolutely one of my all-time favorite people. And he is a nationally recognized U.S. monetary historian and a numismatic expert, which means he is an expert in coins and the grading of coins and things like that. Very, very, very interesting stuff. He's always bringing us really good ideas in terms of how we can hedge our bets against a potential economic collapse or a potential whatever calamity that's going on in the world. We usually talk about geopolitical transitions and things like that as they relate to economic stuff. But today it seems like economic transitions are kind of at the forefront today. So that's what I'd like to speak with him about. First of all, Andrew, thank you very much for joining us and taking some time out of your schedule to be on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks.
Absolutely. Okay, I think probably most people are wanting to find out what is going on with this new gold fix. And I have been trying to get my mind around the old gold fix for a really long time now and how it relates to the value of gold in terms of paper gold versus real gold. And I also was reading an article this morning talking about the transition to the new gold fix. And I got to be perfectly honest with you, Andrew, it looks a whole lot like the new boss looks a lot like the old boss. And so I'm wondering what your thoughts are. And I'm wondering if you could maybe break down for us, for the people like myself who really don't understand, what was the gold fix? What are they hoping the new gold fix is going to be in relation to that? How does it work in terms of the value of gold? You know, how does all that gold fixing play into that? And how is it manipulated, sir?
Well, it's interesting what they've named it. for many years, the primary, I guess the founding place to look would be a book of Wexburg that was written, 1959, I believe. It's called The Merchant.
Hang on here, Andrew. I'm gonna disconnect from you and call you right back because our connection is really bad and you're kind of breaking up and I don't want to, I don't want to miss you. So
all right.
I'm just gonna hang up. I'll call you right back. Ladies and gentlemen, bear with me here for 2 seconds. I'll be right back. Okay.
Okay.
Hopefully we have a better connection. Please pick it up. Yeah, right where you were, sir.
All right. So we had a situation where the merchant bankers ruled the world. Essentially, if I was going to ship something to another point, they would act in both places. So they would advance me my money in this place where I'm shipping from, and then they would receive the money from the merchant in the place where I was shipping to. And by standing in between, like, I might not trust the merchant, but I would definitely trust Rothschilds, or I would trust Mercada. And so these bankers quickly grew to preeminence, and chief among them, of course, we mentioned the Rothschilds, in Mercada and Goldsmith and Pixley and Samuel Montague and company. And what these guys did is they would meet every day in a little room, and they have a flag on their desk. And one person would set a price, and if the flag went down, then that meant, okay, that's it. I'm not interested anymore. If the flags are up, then that means I'm still a buyer. So in today's computer world, it seems rather...
Are you serious? I mean, that was honestly, yeah. it was done with flags. Was the number that they pulled out of the air fairly arbitrary, or where, I mean, how are
yeah,
they...
essentially. Well, the chairman would suggest a price, right? He would say, okay, I think the price is $1,000. And then everyone had a little British flag. And so if they raise their flag, then that means I'm a buyer at $1,000. So then he'd say, okay, well, how about at $1,050? And maybe one guy would put his flag down and three others would leave their flags up. And then he'd say, okay, how about $1,075? And then a couple more flags would go down. And then finally, when the last flag was left standing, he would raise one more price. When that flag went down, that became the gold fix. So the chairman wasn't allowed to set a price until the last flag was down.
Wow.
And this, since 1919, was the way that the gold price was set every morning in sort of a, you know, like a raising of the flag ceremony.
It makes the word arcane doesn't even seem to cover it at this point, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now... it's a brave new world.
Yes.
And computers and high-speed internet and other parts of the world sort of closing in. You know, if you looked at the people that were involved, these were the old-time merchant bankers. And we had a whole new breed of, the ones in China, for example. They had never been part of the gold fix. So what had been happening is once they set the price in London, then the people in China find out what the fix was and said, well, essentially, if I would have been in that room, my flag would have still been up. So I'm buying gold and I'm paying higher than the gold fix. And so what's happened for the longest time is there has been a significant premium between the London market and the Chinese market. So once the London fix would come out, then the Chinese would say, well, whoopsie, $10 more than that, ship it to us. Well, now apparently we've included all of these banks. So Union Bank of Switzerland, as you said, is funny. The new boss, the same as the old boss.
I mean, seriously, but and the article I'm reading says that there are no Chinese banks even participating here at this particular, at today's level. You know, where
correct.
So the idea, how is China even then benefiting from any of this?
Well, either they're using one of these, Union Bank of Switzerland and Barclay. We have, don't forget, Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corporation Holdings. Well, a British bank to be sure, but certainly with roots in Hong Kong and capable of accessing the Chinese market. And then you have the Bank of Nova Scotia, the French bank, and then Union Bank of Switzerland. Now, there is a sixth bank, which we'll hear about today. But historically, if I had to point to somebody, I would say it would be Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corporation that is carrying, if you will, the Chinese market. for the new folks that have gotten together and now they are making the goal fixed daily.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not the premium disappears between what the Chinese are willing to pay and what the fix is in London, that will be the determination of whether this is a true reflection of the market or not. So as we look today, I see gold up another $16, and
right.
Now I can't attribute all of that to the fix. If you recall, we spoke prior to the show.
Mm-hmm.
I said I thought we might see a 5 to 7, maybe $10 premium,
yep.
Which is historically what's been the premium in China. Now, today, however, we have another very interesting event, and that is the crack in the strength of the almighty dollar.
Yes.
And so more than anything else, I think this is what is driving the price of gold higher today. I don't want to say it's just a coincidence that it happens to be on the day that the new fix takes hold, but I know there are those of us sitting out there saying, oh, the first day of the new fix and gold's up like $20. There must be something to it.
Right.
And I would say some of it is that, but a lot of it is, in fact, the weakness that's starting to exhibit itself in the U.S. dollar.
So, I mean, are you saying that because we were at that pretty significant high point with the dollar that people are taking advantage of that and hopping into gold? Or are you saying that there's something else going on that's driving the dollar down and people are kind of panic buying back into gold? What's the correlation, I guess, between the dollar index and the price of gold in your mind?
Well, obviously, higher the dollar is, the lower the price of gold is. You know,
mm-hmm.
The dollar has become the de facto gold standard of the world. So oil all over the world denominated in dollars, gold, of course, fixed in dollars. And so we know, that the higher the dollar is, the less of any of these commodities that it buys. If the dollar starts to break and starts to fall, then the value of these commodities rises almost in lockstep with the fall in the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So they are very correlated. And this, of course, is a trend that I believe, you know, we've seen the dollar go from 72 on the dollar index to 100, let's call it.
Right.
And the trip back down to 72 is what is going to cause the Fed to step in and defend the dollar, and they do this by rates. So, you know, this cautionary language that was in the statement by Janet Yellen, that they're removing the word patience, like they're not going to show patience. Yeah,
right. It doesn't mean we're going to be impatient, though. Remember that.
Right, we're not. But at the same time, if the dollar starts to break with any degree of speed, and starts heading in a rapid fashion to 72, you may see an early jump in by the Fed. Short of that, as long as they can maintain the dollar's appearance of strength, then they won't raise interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, the response of the central bank to raise interest currency, and because the dollar has been as strong as it has over the last 2 years, we're at like 12-year highs now, need for the Fed to raise interest rates. As the dollar starts to fall again, however, this will be reversed, and they will have no choice. If they don't raise rates, it would quickly go into free fall, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so let's talk about, obviously, we're looking at parity between the euro and the dollar as well. Right now, the euro seems
for
to be up a little bit. For a minute, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering
how
all that's going to play in, because obviously this dance is going on, you know, economically around the world. We had Sweden come out yesterday and decide to go more negativer on their interest rates on some key,
mm-hmm.
you know, short-term accounts. And sure. I'm trying to figure out what the balance is going to be, because we've always seemed to be between, you know, quantitative easing so we can hit this target 2% inflation rate. But then these other countries, given Sweden, you know, they're way away from 2% at this point, and we're starting to see them kind of react. It was like a knee-jerk type reaction. I'm wondering what your idea is about, you know, a pending parity between the euro, you know, and the Greek exit still seems to be like it's kind of fomenting under the surface there. What do you think about everything that's going on between the euro and the dollar right now?
Well, it is certainly a teeter-totter, I guess, mm-hmm. would be the best way, the analogy, right? So our very strong euro down, very weak. But as anyone who's ridden a teeter-totter knows, you know, cycle. And so as money flows back into Europe, if you've kept an eye on the DAX or not, the German
yes.
Stock index,
mm-hmm.
soaring, absolutely soaring. PE investors paying 20 times earnings, and you know, talk about a success story. The German stock market clearly, and additionally, you see the rest of Europe starting to get back on its feet, and the fear that, of course, Draghi is helping, and the billion-dollar office building protest. The general sense is that the bottom, and now they're on an upswing again. So as the euro, this is my belief that if we saw parity, it was just for a second, $1.05, $1.06, whatever that might have been. That's probably the bottom, and now the dollar will lose ground. So the euro may stay still. Dollar losing ground,
right,
relative to the euro, you're going to see significantly higher euro to the dollar trades. This will continue, I think, as it's our turn in the barrel.
That I agree with, yeah.
State of easing at a point where the ECB is cranking theirs in.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. Well, okay, let's talk a little bit then about, since it's our turn in the barrel, I'm curious also about this whole Asian and Infrastructure Investment Bank. You know, we had talked a little bit in the past about BRICS potentially being competition for the IMF, and now that this Asian Investment Bank there seems to be a lot of countries now kind of jumping ship on that. And I'm wondering, do you feel like that is just a precursor of more things to come? I mean, are we really at this point the best looking horse at the glue factory in terms of the dollar?
Yes, you know, it is true that the other nations of the world have grown to resent United States veto power at the IMF, get on the block, flexing our muscle all the time, and they want to go it alone. Now, true, we've been behind the scenes telling our join this Asian Infrastructure Bank. Now, their view is that they want to open up the Asian community to the rest of the world, and to do so, they want to rebuild the Silk Road, you know, the old traders' route. They want to put in modern highways and railways and so forth. And so in order to do this, they're going to all get together and form a bank. Now, this is what the IMF is supposed to have done, the World Bank and other development banks that we've had a part of. But quite frankly, we drag our feet. You know, we don't provide the funding that we say we're going to,
right?
And in an attempt to prevent projects, oh yeah, you want to do this project? Oh great, we'll finance it. Just fill out these forms and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait. And so we kind of drag our feet. Well, the Asian Infrastructure Bank is viewed by those countries as a way to subvert the dollar and subvert the strength of the U.S. dollar all over the world, and their whole hog joining. So we, behind the scenes, have told our allies, no, don't join this. But one at a time, they sort of jumped ship. I think yesterday, UK and Australia, right?
Well, UK and France and Italy, and then, yeah, now Australia, also Switzerland threw their hat in the ring today. And it does even sound like now that Japan is actually considering. And again, the deadline for everybody to join is by the 30th of the month, or they're going to have to pay some exorbitant, you know, extra fee to join later. So I'm thinking Japan is going to be a pretty big indicator if they decide to jump ship. That's a pretty big sign of something to come.
Well, I view that as entirely the opposite. You know, my view is that since 1945, the Bank of Japan and the Japanese economy have been a mere outposts of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. So the control over their finances and organization was firmly left in the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. So the reason that the Japanese are holding $1 trillion worth of treasury bonds while their own economy is suffering is not an accident. They do what they are told. And I suspect that if Japan joins and the U.S. doesn't, they'll be our voice at the table.
It's
not like we're... So if Japan joins and the U.S. doesn't, then that's what I suspect that you'll see. Our influence on the Asian Infrastructure Bank represented by our interest in Japan. I view Japan and the Bank of Japan as the 13th Federal Reserve District. I mean, they literally are an outpost for the Fed of New York and have no independence to make their own decisions.
Copy that. So they're going to be like our mole, basically, which is fine,
yes,
I suppose.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
I wanted to just touch really quickly again on the gold fix. Is this new gold fix standard, I'm trying to say this with a straight face, is this going to eliminate the threat of manipulation with this new, I almost got all the way through it.
Must be hard.
Yeah.
There is no way that this will eliminate the threat of manipulation. In fact, if you look at the players, and again, a very restrictive, you know, you remove the fingerprints of Rothschild and Mercata and Goldsmith, and perhaps those that have been accused of manipulating the price in the past. And you bring in this whole new bunch of players, which, as you rightly point out, are the same guys.
Right.
You know, these are the same primary banks that have controlled the trade up until now. So sort of putting in your, just like the Fed sending the Bank of Japan to the Asian Infrastructure Bank, Rothschild sends Barclays and so on, these are all the same players. There's no one new here. And in fact, the addition of the Union Bank of Switzerland really is the icing on the cake.
Or HSBC, either of those two institutions, that raised my red flag. And what really struck me was when I was reading the article, they actually came out and they said, you know, the intention of this is to give the perception that the London manipulation thing is over. And it's like, man, that's about as crystal clear as it could possibly be. They're setting this all up so that they can give the perception that everything is okay again. And I couldn't believe it when they actually put that out.
Truth,
right, exactly.
You're right.
But as long as
you're
that's
not
the perception.
Not saying it's the truth, but that is the perception that we want to give.
That's right.
And, you know, much the same, if you caught the story in the last couple of weeks that the Federal Reserve Bank of New York has been stripped of its power.
Let's talk about that, right? Because that's a huge misnomer I think people are biting into.
Indeed, it's exactly similar to this. So because of the, the allegations of manipulation, you know, go back quite a few years to La Metropole Cafe and the GATA, the Gold Antitrust Association. In the early days of GATA, I mean, I was on the periphery of that organization. And I mean, I viewed it as we're tilting at windmills here, guys, you know,
right.
We know what's what. And you're not going to ever make a change. But to their credit, they really shook up the marketplace to the point where some investigations were starting to take place. And so the view then is, okay, we'll remove the bad players, replace them with straw people, mm-hmm. in the case of these banks. And so now the bad players are gone, and so the system can continue under our control. And the perception of change is given. Well, very same thing is true. The move to audit the Fed and eliminate the Fed in many camps has grown a lot of steam, and a lot of congressmen and senators are looking at the logic of it and saying, well, why shouldn't we audit the Fed?
Right.
And so to end run around all of that, this triangle document, which has been out since 2010, I mean, it's nothing new, it essentially says, okay, well, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, as the lead bank in the system for all these years, has had all of this unchecked power, and that's the reason that the perception of impropriety exists.
Right.
And so what we're going to do to fix that, preempt all of your further complaining, is take away the power from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York and give it to the Federal Reserve Board. Now, for those who... There's a lot of misinformation out there about the Federal Reserve. It is a two-part system. The Federal Reserve banks are the privately owned institutions that everyone speaks of. No question, easy to prove. The Federal Reserve Board, however, they are government employees. That is a branch of government. That is a part of the government, an agency of the government.
Huh.
The chairman of the Fed gets his paycheck from the government. So this taking of the power from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York and placing it with the Federal Reserve Board is enough to convince the senators and congressmen, okay, we don't need to go any further in our probings. So they fixed the problem, and now that can't happen anymore. I'd like the change at the banks and the gold fix. I see absolutely no change in moving the power from the board from the banks to the board.
So we built a bigger revolving door this time, essentially.
Precisely.
Yeah. Okay. So is there any hope at all? I mean, really fundamentally, as the Bretton Woods Institution, is anybody ever going to fix our money? Or are we ever going to get out of this mess, Andrew? I know we're going to a break, and that's a big question, but
yeah, it is a big question. But I mean, I've given up on the idea of mass action since the late '70s, early '80s. I've rallied and stood on my soapbox and, you know, urged Congress to issue its own money and to take away the power to issue money from the Fed. Everything that I've attempted to do in for the greater sense of fixing the big problem, mm-hmm. I've given up on. I'm down to individual action now. Individuals, you don't have to be a shareholder in the Federal Reserve System. You can store your wealth outside the system in what the Constitution defines as money, gold and silver coin of the Republic, period. And so you could just ignore what they do. You don't really have to pay attention.
Well, I was going
to
say, we're seeing that change happen, too, because wasn't it, I think, Utah or Idaho, one of the states this week or a couple states this week or last week all validated gold and silver as real money, and they're doing it on a state level so that they can avoid the capital gains taxes and things like that, and actually people are going to be able to pay their taxes. I really want to say it was Utah, but interesting that we're starting to see that happening on a state-by-state level as well, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, the pendulum has swung. And, you know, I've confronted many congressmen on this issue, and I stop them in their tracks with this every single time. Article 1 of the Constitution. No state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender payment of debt, period. I mean, I can understand how the right to bear arms might mean I can wear a short-sleeved shirt, but I don't see how you can misunderstand. Gold and silver coin is pretty specific.
Well, and especially when you understand how much power we've given away. I mean, I couldn't even put a number on how much of the value of human life that these lecherous bankers have somehow stripped away from us, but it's got to be pretty exorbitant at this point, you know?
Oh, indeed. But it is the mobilization of credit that is the real power there. You know, each of us works on a daily basis, and we exchange our labor and our goods and our products for dollars, which we then store. And in the storage, they, the Federal Reserve Banks, have access to these units whether we want them to or not. Mm-hmm. So their ability to harness our capital is unmatched. I mean, it's never been met in history. We've always had a commodity money, or fiduciary money has not been the way to go, you know, where someone owes you something. But that's what each and every one of us has, a claim against a certain amount of Federal Reserve notes and nothing else. Most of us have no lawful money. So I'm proud of a state like Utah to, you know, drag out the Constitution and look at Article 1. Never mind. It's not even an amendment. It's Article 1.
Yeah.
That the only money is gold and silver. Everything else is a claim on something that doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, I gotta believe that there is going to be a change that's going to be happening soon, either at the IMF level or the Bretton Woods level. I'm sure you've seen the billboards that China has been putting up all over
advertising. Sure, yeah, the new world currency.
Well, and the fact that the actual billboard shows them dropping the gold coin into, you know, which is kind of leading me to believe that they really are looking at an asset-backed kind of deal. We've talked a little in the past about the Plan B from the IMF, but I want to come back and talk about that because I think that Mr. Liu was speaking the other day about the fact that it's criminal if we don't allow these IMF transitions to take place, and just kind of talk to you a little bit more about that when we come back. We've got this 3-minute break. Ladies and gentlemen, please stick with us. Appreciate you guys being in the chat room. We've had a couple of good questions come out of there as well, and so I will steward those across to Mr. Andrew Gauss here in just a few minutes. Keep it right here, guys. 3-minute break. This is the final segment with our guest Andrew coming up here in just a second. So keep it right here, guys. We'll be right back.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to AllGov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the Iodine Now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a one-year supply.
Your future looks really great.
I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the Microplant Powder family. Microplant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at MUSA.org.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you had the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a one-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Sea Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tattler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com, for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
The Kev Baker Show.
Monday through Friday. Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. And for all of you guys hanging out in the chat room at truthfrequencyradio.com, cannot thank you guys enough. We are rejoining our conversation today with Mr. Andrew Gause. I want to highly recommend, again, everyone go to usgoldcoins.com, and you can find out a lot of good information. I know he offers a couple of offers if you email him. I'm sure we'll get into that in a minute. Andrew, before we get into all this other stuff about your website and some of the offers that you guys have made available to listeners, I want to talk a little bit. We were on the subject of the Bretton Woods organization and the some of the transitions that are taking place there. One of the terms that keeps coming up that I am completely fuzzy on, and I'm hoping that you can clarify for us, is this concept of the SDR and the SDR basket. Could you lay out for us in a kind of a ground floor type of method what the SDR basket is, where it came from, and then maybe talk a little bit about some of the potential changes that we could see in that system coming up, sir?
Well, the special drawing rights are essentially a second form of currency that's maintained by the International Monetary Fund. So you have to think of the SDR as a, or a dollar, right? But mm-hmm. It's not really it's a claim on currency. So you can exchange SDR for dollars or euros or pounds or whatever the heck you want. It's a unit of account for the IMF. And it's curious that the SDR calculated technically in dollars. So when they say we owe them 100 million SDR, the dollars that represent those SDR are in fact gold-backed dollars.
Hang on one second here, Andrew. We're having a little technical issue. I'm gonna disconnect and call you right back. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Sorry, buddy. And go.
Okay. So the SDR was originally calculated as one SDR equals $1. But in 73, of course, once we took the dollar off the gold standard, Then they made up a basket of currencies. They said, okay, this is a basket of 16 currencies, and each of these currencies has a little weight in it. And of course, if in fact your currency is strong, that increases the value of the SDR, and if it's weak, that decreases the value of the SDR.
Okay.
So every 4 or 5 years, they reevaluate this basket.
Mm-hmm.
Many have pointed to the SDR and said this will replace, this will be the new world currency. But it's merely, it serves one function of money. It's a unit of account.
Can I pause you for just 1 second, Andrew? And while we were kind of breaking up, I thought I heard you say that the dollars that are part of the SDR basket are gold-backed, those dollars?
Yes. Well, so, they figure them on a different standard, you know. You know, it's not the same dollar that we think of. We think of a dollar as a Federal Reserve note. They mm-hmm. think of a dollar as
like a Treasury Reserve note.
Right, 42 to the ounce.
Okay.
So, you know, when they say we owe them a dollar, it's calculated at 42 to the ounce and not 1,200 to the ounce or whatever it might be today.
Wow, so they're getting a much better deal on money that they were, well, on products that they're buying with SDRs then, given that higher exchange rate.
Right. Well, not so much that, but they make the money that they take from us look smaller than it really is.
Okay.
So, you know, when they say we're giving them $1 billion, yeah, we're giving them $1 billion at $42 to the ounce. You know, so that equivalent in gold is quite higher than $1 billion at $1,200 to
right.
the ounce.
Mm-hmm.
And so our contributions to the IMF are much greater than they appear. But the SDR is used strictly as a unit of account. This is what is important to recognize. It's not, you can't buy things with SDR. You know, it's like it's a world currency. It's what it is. And so this is why many have pointed to it and said, well, this will become the new world currency. And the International Monetary Fund, which, I mean, it's a puppet organization of the United States Federal Reserve. That's
okay.
essentially all it is. That they will be the new masters of international currency.
Okay. So what about this idea that China might be able to include their renminbi? Normally, all the articles that I read say, you know, they do, just like you suggest, you know, every 5 years they reevaluate all the currencies in the basket. But China apparently has been really chomping at the bit to try and get the renminbi in there. And it does look like sometime in October, they're going to be potentially adding it early. You know, normally it would be added at the first of the year is traditionally when they do all that. So I'm just curious right now if you feel like this big move from China might not only include China but also include some other currencies being leveled into that SDR basket, and then how that will play into the geopolitical, you know, scene in terms of giving more people voting rights at the IMF level. Or will it?
Well, you know, this is what Jack Lew, the Secretary of the Treasury, is all on about. In
right.
fact, there's a great report if you want to check it out. It's the International Program Congressional Justification for Appropriations for 2016, available from the Office of Management and Budget. I can put it on my website later this afternoon, but it's essentially the Secretary of the Treasury laying out the case of why Congress should allow the change in the IMF. And one of the curious changes that they're proposing is that we increase our quota by $56 billion, meaning we give them $56 billion.
But okay.
Right. And right now, we have a $56 billion in that we've agreed to lend. So if there's a need for it, then, you know, we would put in $56 billion. If there's no need, we don't put it in.
Okay.
Agreement to borrow, I think, is what they call it. So what they suggest is that we remove our agreement to borrow by $56 billion, and we increase our quota by $56 billion. And to Jack Lew, there's no difference. Those are the same. It's not a net increase. But to everyone else, especially those who understand the 42 to the dollar, this is like a $500 billion hit. To the U.S. taxpayer and the U.S. Treasury.
Oh, right.
Now, why are we doing that? Well, we're doing that because we're going to allow China at the table, but without, and at the same time, maintain our power and control over the IMF. And so without coming out and telling us that, although if you read the executive summary of this report, he does kind of make that case that, oh, if we don't do this, we're going to lose our influence. A new initiative in this request is a North American Development Bank, which finances environmental infrastructure on the U.S.-Mexican border.
Ah.
And they want, they want to increase our influence throughout the world by increasing our contributions to the Asia Development Bank, the Africa Development Bank, the World Bank. All right. And in doing this, they hope to short circuit what is developing to be a competitive organization in the AIIB.
Okay, so I just want to make sure I get this straight in my mind. So the idea right now is that if the SDR does expand to include China, obviously they'll be given a larger role in the decision-making process at the IMF. And in order to counter that from the U.S. side, because we want to keep the ratio of control the same, we're essentially going to give them 500 times more money than we normally do, because that will keep the ratio in essentially the same format that it is now. Is that what I'm picking up?
Exactly. Okay. Correct. That we maintain our, using my air quotes, control over the International Monetary Fund, while at the same time giving China a kind of a foot in the door. I want to back up just a step on this China thing. I'm not sure if I've made my point on this show. You know, ever since the Ford truck plant and the visit by Nixon to China, we've essentially partnered with the Chinese. Not we in the sense of the United States, but we in the sense of the shadow government. So the Federal Reserve banks and the corporations that control them are partners with the Chinese government. And here I'm speaking of Goldman Sachs and others. So these entities have partnered with the Chinese government and allowed them free trade status where they can effectively export all of their products to the U.S. market and most favored nation status. Mm-hmm. And this is what has built China to the place that it is. And the idea that they're adversarial to this organization is insane. They are partners with the folks at the Federal Reserve. In the old Alexander Hamilton model, when he founded the first bank of the United States, he included everyone. He put the congressmen in, he put senators in, heck, he even put the president in. So everyone gets to participate. Everyone gets a piece of the pie. And in this way, as he explained it, you don't have any enemies out there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at it from that perspective, it makes perfect sense. Of course, I'm not a fan of handing over $500 billion to the rest of the world, but from the perspective of the Secretary of the Treasury, it's necessary for us to maintain our control, especially since we've not been able to short-circuit the AIIB.
Right. Well, and I kind of wonder, too, how the Shanghai Corporation Organization plays into all of this. It seems like they've got a pretty substantial anti-NATO coalition already built between China and Russia, which, again, just makes me feel like this whole BRICS organization is part of circumventing the sanctions. But then I read an article this week about Mr. Putin over there essentially trying to create an Eastern European Union with a single currency. So then that puts me back in the camp of, okay, here we are, creating these larger unions, which is obviously on the march towards the one world government union, which is, of course, what these people have always wanted. So again, I'm still kind of on the fence on the BRICS thing, and I'm still really on the fence now about Putin, given the whole, unified currency thing in the region. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's what the trilateral thing is all about, right? It is, a North American, South American currency unit, a Asian currency unit, and a European currency unit.
Mm-hmm.
So understanding how fiat money works, it's all about market share. So the more people that you can have working and denominating their wealth in your unit, then that's more that you get to issue. So think of it in terms of, for every hour that somebody works, you get to print $10, or for every hour that somebody works, you get to print 10 rubles. And so the goal of the Russian Federation is, of course, they had that huge ruble sphere before the fall of the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And the bigger you can make your pool, the more people are working and laboring for your currency unit, the greater your control. And this is exactly what the Federal Reserve has done since 1913. The dollarization of the world is not an accident. Bretton Woods was not an accident. That switch in the phrase by Harry Dexter White, that the gold or its equivalent, which in that case meant dollars because they were backed by gold. And that's how the dollar came to be the standard for oil prices.
Oh, okay.
And it's curious to note is that Harry Dexter White was also implicated as a Russian spy. So, you know, Russia and the United States, again, I don't mean the government of the United States or the people, but rather the second government, right, the Federal Reserve banks and its entities, are in very close partnership, I believe, with the Russian Federation. Curiously, did you see the move by SWIFT? You know, they were going to throw Russia out.
Yeah.
Instead, they put Russia on the board. Yeah, exactly. So the cooperation that exists towards the greater goal, which is a single unified world currency, and whoever's at control of that has the ability to denominate the working power of every person on the planet. That's the ultimate goal of slavery. You know, you don't enslave the people and free the money. That's the way our system used to work. We had gold and silver money, and slaves were in chains. Now we have fiat money, and slaves are able to walk around free because they're chained by their monetary unit. Their labor is captured. Their efforts are captured through the issuance of the monetary unit.
Well, it's a large open-air prison at this point, pretty much on the global scale.
Or plantation. Yeah, a global plantation, right.
Hey, I want to talk a little bit about the all this FX probe settlement stuff. I don't know if you're watching the news on this today, but it looks like the United States Justice Department is looking to renegotiate some of these settlements from the big banks with new accusations saying that after you guys settled with us, you went back to doing the same old thing again. Are you following any of that? And I know I had a question from the chat room yesterday wondering about when these huge billion-dollar fines come down on these massive, you know, global banks, where does that money go?
Right. Well, in theory, it goes straight into the Treasury.
Okay.
And I've been following, of course, Bank of New York Mellon, but you know, JP, Citi, and all of them, I think last year paid nearly $3.5 billion.
That's
but you know, the Justice Department is essentially correct. They went right back to business as usual. So you know, they were doing it up to that time. They got caught. They paid their fine, and now they're right back in there doing it again. And nothing has changed.
No one's been to jail. No one's going to jail. What are we going to do?
No.
What's going to happen
No.
here?
Well, what's going to happen is, you know, the very same things that occurred in the stripping the power from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York and setting up a new gold fixing exchange. I imagine we're going to have some sort of transparency regulations or some sort of control placed on the FX markets.
Right.
But folks have to understand, I mean, this is $5 trillion a day in trades, $5 trillion every single day. And especially lately, as countries, and Russia chief among them, Brazil, and companies from these various countries that have incurred dollar debt back when the dollar was 72 on the dollar index,
mm-hmm.
see a sharply rising dollar and realize to themselves, well, goodness, it's taking more and more of our currency to buy these dollars to pay back our dollar-denominated debt. Maybe we should put in a hedge. So they go into the FX market, and they buy dollar futures. And the idea is that if the dollar keeps rising, we make money on the futures, and we use that to make up what we lost on our loan. Well, the number of international borrowings denominated in U.S. dollars has doubled since the crisis. And if every one of these are now hedged against the rising dollar, then that means you've effectively got double the transactions out there.
Right.
And in some cases triple. The fall this time from the dollar's heights will be sharp and precipitous. And I'll tell you, for a lot of the folks who believe in a total collapse, this one is set up like never before.
Boy, I tell you, I was reading an article about some of the other economic indicators, major, major red flags flashing all over the place. I also want to get, I think we've talked about it before, but I want to touch back on this subject of the 7-year cycles. I mean, we just had this huge supermoon eclipse, first day of the Nisan year, which is the start of the Shemitah year, which is supposed to end in September or something like that. But we've seemed to have this ongoing 7-year cycle theme. And I'm wondering if you're starting to see these red flags that are going on right now. Are we looking for a black swan event, or like, you know, how close to the cusp do you feel like we are here?
Well, I feel like we are, you know, like the people climbing the fruit trees and, you know, hanging on every branch trying to get the last piece of fruit.
Right.
One little shake of the branch and there's going to be a lot of people on the ground.
Uh-huh.
And I certainly see speculation and bets in areas concerning the Federal Reserve and its monetary policy at an all-time high. So we've never seen this level of speculation before. And so when Janet Yellen comes out and says something that might spook the market, I don't know if you remember the taper tantrum, when just the very thought that the Federal Reserve was going to taper its bond purchases sent every market into a tizzy.
Right.
And they had to quickly backtrack. Well, the very same thing is happening now with the prospect of rising interest rates. So black swan, we don't know what it is. That's the problem. And could it be that, well, Russia owes $300 billion this year. They don't have the ability to roll it over because they can't borrow dollars. Dollars are very strong. Will they default on their debt? Will the Greece problem, of course, translate into problem for Western banks? Any of this could happen. It's just that every metric that you look at is on max. 27 times earnings for the S&P. If you want to buy a dollar's worth of S&P stock, you have to pay 27 times the earnings. That's insane. That's historical highs. So every single market that you look at, the bond market, the stock market, take your pick, every one of them is in the red line. And so what is left but a crisis? That's what appears to be on the horizon.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, given that, and given the fact that you're a numismatic expert, and I know that you also are a gold dealer, let's talk a little bit about hedging the bets right now. Is right now the right time to be hopping into silver with the dollar index so high, hopping into gold and things like that? And what else should we be thinking about given the time frame that we're kind of looking at right now?
Yeah, you get your most for the money, obviously, when dollar's very strong and gold and silver are historically low. Now, I would point out that gold is at a 3-month low and silver, probably a 6-month low, mm-hmm. while the dollar's at a 12 or 13 year high. So we're still significantly higher than one would expect us to be in the gold and silver markets. I'm not an expert in bullion, and because the very thing that makes gold money, the supply and demand equation where there's a fixed supply and demand causes prices to rise, has been perverted by electronic trading.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people can sell options and futures and contracts on gold that they don't own, it really has a tendency to pervert the price. As I said, it takes away one of the very things that makes gold money, the fact that a fixed supply against existing or increasing demand. If you can alter the supply with paper, then it's not really gold. That's the equivalent of alchemy. My market is the numismatic market. I deal in lawfully issued money of the United States Treasury mm-hmm. in the form of gold and silver coins. I love the old silver dollars, the old $20 gold pieces.
Me too.
And you can buy them right now for not a huge premium over their actual silver and gold content. They are exempt from confiscation, the bullion confiscation. They're exempt from reporting. They are lawful money. And they, the last little shred of the Constitution that you have to stand on, is the coins of the Treasury of the United States. Having said that, $20 gold pieces right now in museum quality mint state can be bought for $1,700. And silver dollars, again, in mint state, museum quality,
mm-hmm.
$35 to $40. To me, that represents outstanding opportunity. And the only caveat here is that you should never rely on the person that's selling you the coin to also be the one to certify its authenticity and condition.
That makes sense.
I prefer NGC, Numismatic Guarantee Corp. That's all they do. They say, okay, this is a silver dollar and it's a mint state 63 on a scale of 1 to 70. Once they do that, then you know what the value of the coin is. You can go right to ngccoin.com, and there's a price posted right there. You can see what the market values the coin at, and that makes it rather easy for the novice investor, it doesn't have to be a coin collector, to participate in this wonderful, wonderful way to hedge your bet.
Mm-hmm.
I try to explain it all in 5 minutes. It would... Your head would spin. So what I've done, I put together 3 audio CDs. The first is probably our most popular. It's the Federal Reserve. How it operates, dispels all the myths and disabuses you of some of the patriot mythology out there about, what the Fed is and what it does and how it gets money into circulation.
Right.
And the second one is the definition of money. It's hard to save for the future when you don't know what money is.
Right.
And this certainly explains it. And then the third, protecting your wealth. that goes step by step into how to buy the gold and silver coins and how not to be taken advantage of. If you're a red pill listener, you can have this package, which is normally a $40 package, absolutely free. All you have to do is call the 800 number and tell them Andy sent you or JD sent you. You heard it on the red pill, something along like that. And we'll send it out to you free. The number to call is 800-468-2646. Again, mention the red pill or JD or Andy, and we'll send it to you free of charge. We even pay the shipping. There's no obligation. Listen, you're not going to get a high-pressure sales pitch. It's just basic explanatory stuff. If it works for you and you think it makes sense, then you can explore it further with an individual on the phone. And again, the number to call is 800-468-2646. We welcome your call. Just mention Red Pill or JD, Andy Goss, and we'll send you these three audio CDs and some booklets and pamphlets and newsletters free of charge.
Man, that is so gracious of you. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that, Andrew. Very cool, and I know the listeners appreciate that as well. While we're on the subject, since we know all this goofy manipulation has been going on, if you had to put a number on it, what do you think an actual ounce of gold is worth today right now?
Well, if you took all the gold that we have in our reserves, about 205 million ounces, and you put that in one pile, and then you take all of the existing Federal Reserve notes, bonds, bills, or notes, and you kind of stack them next to each other. Now, I say that, all the existing, because potential money, you know, there are claims that the Federal Reserve has the power to monetize debt instruments. There are three times as many debt instruments as there is money in existence. So just the money in existence today, just money that you have in your checking account and Joe has in his savings account and paper printed money and coin, and you put all that in a separate pile, you put the gold in the other pile, and you start dividing the two against each other, it's $56,400 per ounce.
I'm sorry, I got to adjust my headphones here. Did you say $56,000 per ounce?
Per ounce, yeah. And that's just the simple expedient of all the money that we think we have in our checking and savings and what we call money with a zero maturity, MZM, which is about $12 trillion, and then all of the paper money in circulation, which is another $1 trillion, and divide that against our $205 million ounce gold stash, which is unaudited, by the way. Mm-hmm. Then you'd get a price in excess of $56,000 an ounce.
That is just, I mean, that level of manipulation is so astounding, Andrew. I'm kind of speechless at this point.
Yeah, it's a frightening number. So when people predict, you know, $3,000 gold or $5,000 gold, or I've even heard $12,000 gold, it doesn't shock me. Just as when gold was $250 and I was thinking it would go to $1,000, you know, I would get the same looks. But it would not be unreasonable for the price of gold to increase by 400% from where we are right now. So $5,000 gold would not surprise me in the next 5 years.
Absolutely unbelievable. Andrew, we are out of time. Thank you very, very much for taking time out of your schedule to join us today. I really appreciate you you being here and all the amazing insight that you bring to the table.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for the day. I highly recommend you guys stay on TFR. Roger Sales Show will be coming up next. It is a fantastic live day, actually all day at TFR. Vince Vanilli and Aaron Dakins. Then you've got Aaron and Mel, and then 3 hours of the Woo Crew and 3 hours of Christian Cherie tonight. It's going to be absolutely outstanding. We're going to go. You guys have a wonderful weekend. We will see you guys later. Good luck. Take care. Good luck out there. We'll see you.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Sherry Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUE.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR. Truth Frequency Radio.